for being invited to come. I'm glad that I'm really here. Most of you know that I am battling cancer, and I'm looking forward to having radiation treatments, all 38 of them. That's what I'm supposed to have. I was hoping it would make my hair fall out so I could shave my head. But they said it won't do that. But I do appreciate very much your prayers and your concerns. Some of you sent me cards, and I really do appreciate that. In August of 1990, I actually left here to go back to Hartsville, which was my home. I just celebrated 25 years of being there, and I don't know how much longer that I'll be there. And that's just being honest. Without things that are going on. So with me, not with the church, but in this thing. But if you look at your text for tonight, it's Romans 12 and verse 15, basically it tells us that, I forgot what it said. Let us rejoice with those that rejoice and weep with those that are weak. Actually, let us rejoice with those that are rejoicing, and let us weep with those that are weeping. I want you to turn with me to the 51st Psalm. So I can tell you also that my bride, as Roger asked, she's my bride of 46 years, 11 months, and thank you, 12 days is at home. We'll be married 47 next month. I want you to notice with me in Psalm 51, and we're going to get there eventually. So I want you to stay there. I want you to imagine, if you will, think about someone who died, or an ex, that means an ex-husband or a wife, without feeling brokenhearted. Imagine living and loving to the fullest. What would that be like? When we stop and we think about some things, we think about some indicators that maybe we're responding are to unresolved grief. And my subject is to deal with a lost child or man. Brethren, a loss is a loss. It's just the intensity of that loss. It can be a loss of a child, and it can be a loss of a parent. It can be a loss of a spouse, or it can be a loss like some people just experience, financial loss. But it's a loss. And actually, we grieve in reference to all of those things. There are 43 of them. And we grieve for them the very same way. It's just the intensity. So as we talk about that, and we're supposed to talk reference to that, a child, we're going to talk about that, make reference to them. But let me ask you some questions before we begin. Do you, in reference to experience of unresolved grief, do you refuse to talk about your loss? Do you avoid thinking about your loved one who died because good memories are painful? Do you avoid places or events that remind you of someone who died? One of our members lost his daughter. They found her dead in her house. Sunday night, we went to Taco Bell. That's the last place all of us had a meal with her. It was very difficult for that family. We find, do you only talk about their positive, refusing to admit they might have had some negative qualities too? Do you keep the same exact routines you did when they were still alive because you're afraid you will forget them? Do you only talk about their negative qualities as if they never did anything good? Do you avoid getting close to people? Unresolved grief is usually at the root of fear about any new relationship. There are some common indicators. Do you keep the same exact routine, as we said? Well, I got that. By saying all of those things, I want us to realize that according to what the Bible teaches us, that our Heavenly Father, in Genesis 6 and verse 6, grieved over the people of the day. Because of what they were doing, the things they were involved in, He made them and put them in a perfect place and told them there's only one command, that they should not violate it. And they violated that. So He grieved. We find also in John chapter 11, verses 35 to 38, that the Son of God also grieves. When we think about all the things that are going on, there are crises that are all around us. This is a time to learn. The journey through life is a series of losses and crises and trauma. And we cannot avoid it. Our problem is that we have not taught ourselves, or we in the church have not taught ourselves, or taught members of the church really how to grieve, especially that of our children. And a lot of the things that we've learned are things that we have observed and those things that have been passed down to us. Over in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, I'm in 1 Corinthians, I'm sorry, in 2 Corinthians chapter 1. Notice what Paul, when he writes to the church at Corinth, and remember, as he writes to them, that he's writing to them, and they've had all kinds of problems in the first letter. And he says to them, "Blessed be the God, and even the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies, and the God of all comfort, who comforted us in all of our tribulations, all of our afflictions, that we may be able to comfort them which are in trouble." He comforts us because we're his children. And therefore, those that are in trouble, we can comfort them. He says, "There which are in trouble, by the comfort wherein we ourselves are comforted of God." But do we understand the comfort that God gives us? Have we learned the way to actually grieve for those losses that we have in our life? I want you to notice also that when we stop and we think about Jesus and how that he grieved, but he was a man of compassion. Being a man of compassion, that means that he was a human being like we are human beings. He knew how to love, but he knew also how to grieve. And we'll look at that before we end. Y'all didn't laugh. I want you to look at the background of Psalm 51 with me before we actually read that. If you'll go over to 2 Samuel. And I'm most basically going to tell you the story because you probably know the story because we've studied the Old Testament, probably all of us out a number of times, and we've been told these stories over and over again. In 2 Samuel chapter 9, very beginning in verse 11, and we find that David actually commits adultery. That here's this woman by the name of Bathsheba bathing, as we would probably say, on the clothes, are we skimpy clothing up on top of her house, but David's house was a little higher and he was looking down upon her that he should not have been. But he did that anyway. Eventually, he committed adultery with her, and not only that, but she conceived a child. And if you recall how David went about to get rid of, to try to get away from that sin, he called Uriah in to come in, and he encouraged Uriah to go and be with his family and be with his wife, and Uriah would not do that. He says, "No, I'm not going to do that." He says, "My men are fighting out there in the field." It reminds me of my company commander in Vietnam. He's eating a steak with the stars, you know. Stars, bars. And he finally just called and says, "My men can't have steak, neither do I," when he left. So he got in trouble, but next time we came in, we had steak too. But anyway, that's what he was doing. He says, you're right. He says, "No, I'm not going to do that. My men are out there fighting, and I'm not going to do that." Well, then you know how the story goes. He was told, Joab was told by David, "Go in front of the line," and withdraw from it, let it be. And that's what we had adultery, deception, and murder. And that's what happened. Because of sin. And we find there that when we begin to read about all this has taken place, that Nathan the prophet comes to David and tells David, he takes it to him, he says, "Thou art the man. You're the one that's caused this problem between you and that of God. You've sinned against God." David, when you go and you begin to read, they tell him that the child is going to die. Verse 20 of chapter 12, it says, "And David rose up from the earth, washed and anointed himself and changed his apparel, and came into the house of the Lord and worshiped. And he came," he says, "to his own house, and when he required, they set bread before him, and he did eat. Then said the servants unto him, What thing is this that thou hast done? Thou didst fast and weep for the child while it was alive." Notice how he did when the child was alive. He said, "Yes," but he said, "But when the child was dead, thou didst arise, but thou didst rise and eat bread." And he says, "While the child was yet alive, I fasted well, for I said, Who can help whether God will be gracious to me that the child, that God had already told the child to die?" Did you see some faith, David, don't you? That maybe God changed his mind. But now he's dead. "Wherefore should I fast? Can I bring him back again? Shall I go to him? I shall go to him, but he shall not return unto me." David just simply understood about that of death, that his child had died, and yet his child wasn't going to come back. And therefore, what David needed to do is live like God told him. And therefore, if he did that, then he'd be able to go to him. There, that little black thing, anybody look for it? It doesn't want to stay on. But look at Psalm 51. Psalm Psalm 51, verses 1 through 19. How merciful. Here's David. Now, this psalmist says to be written because of the sin of Bathsheba. Have mercy upon me, O God, according to thy loving kindness and the multitude of thy tender mercies. Blot out my transgression. Wash me thoroughly from my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. For I acknowledge my transgressions and my sin ever before me. Against thee and thee only have I sinned and done this evil in thy sight, that thou mightest be justified when thou speakest and be clear when thou judgest. Behold, I was shapen in iniquity, and in hidden sin did my mother conceive me. Behold, thou desirest truth in the inward parts and in the hidden parts, that thou shalt make me known, me to know wisdom. Purge me with wisdom, and I shall be clean. Wash me, and I shall be whiter than snow. Make me to hear joy and gladness, and the bones which thou hast broken may rejoice. Hide thy face from my skin, and blot out my iniquities. Greet in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. Cast me not away from thy presence, and take thy Holy Spirit from me. Restore unto me the joy of thy salvation. Uphold me with thy free spirit, he says. Then will I teach transgressors thy ways, and sinners shall be converted unto thee. Deliver me from blood guiltiness, O God, thy God of my salvation. My tongue shall speak of thy righteousness. O Lord, open thou my lips, and my mouth shall show forth thy praise. For thou desirest not sacrifice, else I will give it. Thou delightest in not in burnt offerings, but the sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken contract heart. O God, thou wilt not despise. Do good in thy good pleasure unto Zion. Build the walls of Jerusalem. Then shalt thou be pleased with the sacrifice of righteousness with burnt offering and whole burnt offering. Then shalt thou offer, or they offer a bullock unto thy altar. When you look at Psalm verses 1 through 19, it's an expression of that of the regret of David. David says, I've sinned. I've caused this. The problem that I have just gone through, the sin that I've just gone through, the regret that I have gone through. He's actually regretted everything that he's done because of the very sin within Bathsheba. So one sin, we would say, leads to another. Actually, you can actually see the tears of David when you read Psalm. Now that David is pleading with God to forgive him of those sins. Now David was a man who was grieving. I want you to notice, you may not be able to see the picture. There's all kinds of things that are mentioned in there, and we'll mention some of them in just a few moments. You've probably heard in your lifetime, as I have heard in my lifetime, the five stages of grief. I won't ask you to raise your hand if you've heard those. You're in college like I was. I did counseling. Troy and other places, I took counseling courses, and they always brought these things up. And one of them is denial. The second one is bargaining. The third one, anger. The third one is bargaining. The fourth one is depression. And the fifth one is acceptance. Anybody ever heard of it? Yeah, we've heard of that. Well, I'm here to tell you that Dr. Ross, when she wrote her book, it wasn't about grieving. Okay? And so we'll talk more about that. Basically, I have been brought up, and most likely you, that if we have lost a child or lost any loss, and we want to especially think about that of human loss, that people have come along and would tell us, don't feel bad. Some people would even tell us that, you know, we need to replace the loss in kind. Some people also tell you to go by yourself and just grieve alone. You know, if you're going to cry, go in your room. And some people will tell us, just give me time. Time heals all things. Anybody believe that time heals all things? See, anybody ever had a flat time? Yeah, and you sit down beside ideas, and you sit there, and you sit there, and you sit there, and you wait for the hour to come back, right? Time heals all things. No. That's what I was told when I came back from Vietnam. Well, I waited, and it got worse, and it got worse. It didn't work. Then someone says, well, just be strong for others. Mama. And you got to be strong. We may lose our father or something, or may lose our father and our mother still there, or our mother and our father still there, or, you know, or we may lose a child. A And I go to my wife and I said, "Linda, you've got to be strong for the other children." Or maybe we were told, "Keep busy." I remember one place I was at and I preached and said something to someone. Someone said something about what the sister was doing and what she's doing. She's cleaning her house, doing everything, and doing all these different things. And they said, "That's the way Mama's breathing." Well, she's keeping busy. Did she grieve? No, she's too busy to grieve. Is that right? She is. Not only that, have you ever heard or said these things to someone? Get a hold of yourself. It's time to get over this. Get on with your life. You cannot fall apart now. You know, look, you got to be strong. You can't fall apart. Then they'll say, "Well, keep a stiff upper lip." No, don't like that one too much. But then they say, "Pull yourself up by the bootstraps." Or they'll come along and say, "We understand how you feel." If you ever said that, don't raise your hand. Let me tell you now, there's not a person in here. You have felt when my mother died. Now, you may have lost your mother, but you don't have. See, you're assuming that I have the same relationship with my mother that you have with your mother. And that's not true. All, remember this, you don't get anything else. All relationships are unique. All of them. We understand how you feel. Then be thankful you have other children. I actually said something to that. The young girl, I was in the hospital at a place I was preaching. They said, "We need a chaplain or a preacher down in emergency room." So I went flying down the emergency room and I was the first one there. I kind of took my time because I didn't really want to go to emergency room, but I probably was the only preacher in the place. So I got down there and here's this young girl in there that had a crib bed. And I was trying to comfort her and I said, you can have other children. She slung a cigarette lighter against the wall. She says, "I can't have any more children. There's only one child." I didn't say another word. I said the wrong thing. She said, "Why did God take my child?" I said, "Well, maybe God took your child because a child was innocent. Maybe God foresaw that somewhere along the line your child would not be faithful to Him." And her answer was, "Why didn't God give my child a chance to do that?" So I hugged her and said, "Man, I done said two wrong things." You know, they'll say, "Well, the living must go on. He or she is in a better place. And not only all things must pass," they will say. "God will never give you more than you can handle your day. You should not be angry with God." Why not? Not that you blame God. But you say, "You look at all those things, but there's one thing. What about you?" You know, here's this loved one standing beside the coffin, and we're saying all these things to them, and in their mind they say, "But what about me? That's my loved one. That's my loss. But what's going to happen to me?" In other words, they want to deal with their feelings. And I say here, but we mean here. They want to deal with what they have up here. They have precious memories of their loved one, and they want to tell people about those precious memories that they have. They may have some things that are not so pleasant that they might try to get out also. Whatever it may be, but what about me? What am I going to do? And all they want to do is have someone who has a heart that has ears. But sometimes when someone says, "You know, I know how you feel." Best thing for us to do is just be quiet. Don't say a word. Have a heart with ears. Listen to what they say. Don't touch them. Don't interrupt them. Let them talk until they quit talking. If they cry and you cry, keep crying. If you don't touch them, you let them talk. Then when they get through, you say, "I'm sorry for your loss." And then you can say something like, "Will you accept the other?" That's the best thing you can do. In fact, that's what you should do. I want you to notice, comparison robs dignity because you never know how someone else feels. That is, "Well, I don't know how you feel because I lost time number two." That's comparison. And that's not a thing really to say or a thing to do. There are facts that we should come to realize in reference to that of grief, because there are many myths that are out there. Grieving people want and need to be heard, not fixed. You can't fix the broken heart. It's broken. And it's going to stay broken until that person breathes their last breath. Therefore, there ought to be something that we can do as members of the church, as Christian people, to help this person come to some type of completeness with their grief. To learn how to deal with that. Not only that, are we learning how to deal with that, I'm teaching them how to deal with that, but also we are teaching our children how to deal with grief. I wonder today, if children were listening to the TV or radio or whatever they did, I guess they still listen to those things. They may have something to follow. But when the two people were killed up in Virginia area, you know, if they see it on TV, but it's live on TV, people don't need to be fixed. They need to be to grief recovery. We call it, I call it, the way that I was trained, is that grief never ends, but it does change. It is actually, as we're going to say, a passage and not a place to stay. You don't want to stay there. You actually want to move on. But some of the encouragement that we give people, some of the sayings that we say is encouragement to stay where they are. But we got to move on. The sense of loss must give way if we are to value the life that was lived. Grief is a person's own personal experience. It's personal. And it's unique. Grief is unlike any other life experience that a person will ever go through. I wrote it in my notes. You remember that fellow that went around had to touch every night? What was his name? I don't remember that. I don't remember his name either. What was his name, anybody? He says, it's a jungle out there. And it is. It really is. There's crisis and trauma everywhere. And we see it every day. But how do we actually do it? The word grief comes from a Latin word that means to burden. That will bring a lot of passages to our mind. Like Galatians 6 verses 1 and 2. It's a heavy weight or burden. And therefore, as we think about it, then, if I have that grief and it's unresolved, it's almost always about undelivered communications of an emotional nature. If I had gotten there, if I had not stopped at the crystal and eaten breakfast and gotten there, then I would have been there when my mother, before my mother died, and I could have told her for one last time that I loved her. Now I've got to carry that with me to my grave. I can go to the grave and express it now. I can write a letter to her. Could I not? Why do I want to carry that burden all the way to my own brother? Time cannot heal an emotional wound any more than time could pick air back and put air back into a flat tire. Now, to me, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, that's what the book has been written about that I wrote, is grief. I grieve for those who lost their lives. I grieve for my friends. I grieve for them even when we got back and I never saw them again, even though they were alive. I grieve. Then I got to see some of them and I began to work with what I call my grief. Time cannot heal an emotional wound. You may think it will, but it doesn't. You think about that flat tire. What is grief? There's all kinds of definitions, but grief is a normal and a natural reaction to significant emotional loss of any kind. Whatever it may be. If it's an emotional loss, however a person reacts to that, it's normal and it's natural. And sometimes people say, they should act that way. It's normal and natural for them to act however they act. It's normal and natural. Grief is the conflict in feelings caused by the end of or change in a familiar pattern of behavior. You can no longer, since we're talking about a child, should you talk about a child like David's, you can no longer hold a child. I had to tell the mother one time in a crib bed. The undertaker came to me and said, Bob, you are going to have to tell her to put the baby back. She was holding the baby for the last time. His funeral, his time. But I'm in control. So I walked over to her and I said, look, when you get through, you put your baby back in the coffin and you'll go. And I walked off. I didn't care if she held it for 5 minutes or another hour. Yeah, I wasn't going to drop it. She held it and coded it and gave it the last kiss and laid it in the coffin and back to put it in, and she said goodbye. Now this is what it gets like. Grief is the feeling of reaching out for someone who has always been there, only to find when you need them again, they're no longer there. That's what grief is. And therefore, I miss mom. I miss her. We meet once a month to go out and eat my mother and I. So I miss her. Something has changed with my life. If I had lost a child, and even if that miscarriage is the loss of a child, especially to the mother. And sometimes we as men, husbands, don't understand if a woman loses a child. We don't understand the emotional wound that's there. But we need to come to that understanding. Grief. How many of y'all know first aid? Y'all raise your hand because I want to know if there's a heart attack. So if I were to fall down here right now, how many of y'all know how to save my life? Well, now if you fall down, you know what I'm going to do. I'm going to call 911. I don't know how to take care of it. But now when I was in high school, they called us first aid. They don't do that anymore, did the Gale. They called us in the Army first aid. That many years ago, I don't forgot that. I like to choke to death. And all you have to do if you're not choking to death, stand here and run and get something other than it all comes up. But I had somebody call the first, little short person first, do it this way. And she was hitting the wrong place. I was trying to put her hand up and big you can. Exactly. I said, whoa. So people know how to do this. But why is it that we spend a lot of time training people like those people on 911? You can call 911 and says they have swallowed, they have drunk this. What was it? Got the ball there and you tell them, they exactly what it is. Why did they do that? Because they've been trained. But here we visit somebody day by day, week by week, year by year, and they're grieving. They haven't moved on with their life. It's because we have not been trained to do so. You have a child, one is sick and dies. You guard the child sick, and you watch the child dies. Then you have another child who's very healthy, and all the child, sudden the child is killed. It's the intensity of the loss. There's no idea of getting prepared, so it's the intensity of it. Grief is that normal reaction to a significant loss of any kind. Why do we not train people how to grieve and how to help other people grieve? You see, we need to train people to help people to grieve. That is, like we say, we need to have a heart with ears. Up here, these people got a mouth, and all they're wanting is two of these. And this up here, tell this right here, be quiet. Let me tell you my story. In our PTSD counseling, sometimes we would ask people, well, just tell me your story. And we'd let them tell it. Nobody interrupt it. Nobody touch it. We let them talk. Why don't we do that? A person wants to talk. If you're here tonight, you're grieving. You can agree. You want somebody to listen to you, right? You don't have to raise your hand or say amen or shake your head. You want somebody to listen to you. You want them to listen to you so you can tell about your loved one, how much you love them, how much you care for them, or whatever it may be. You want them to listen. We need to make a loss graph. How many of you ever sit down and talk about all the losses you had in your life? You ever done that? It's scary. All of the losses that you've ever had. In your life. I'm not talking about losses. In April of 1962, I lost my brother and two good friends in the river, Edwall River. They both, all three drowned. We looked for them for 17 to 21 days. I lost other people. I made this, but even with the ones that I was in Vietnam with, I made a loss graph. Then I chose the ones that I wanted to actually deal with. You see, when you make one of those loss graph, there are components that are there. Every time you bring up someone, you find that there's an apology made that you owe this person. I'm sorry that I stopped at the Crystal Lake and get in there. Maybe I'll love you by the time. Please forgive me for not going on to college because that's what you want to do with my life. Or it may be just a significant quote. Mama, I always remember what you said. from your Savior. These things. Those things are all those things. And then what we usually do, what we try to do is get people to compose as we say a completion letter. And then I'm going to shock you to death. No, don't do that. We all be grieving if we do that. And then you say goodbye. Don't get excited. I will call you. And we're talking. And you've already said everything you're going to say to me. I said, okay. Well, maybe we get to get lunch one day. Okay? Okay. Okay, Mom. Goodbye. What did you just do? You said goodbye to that conversation, right? I want to talk to Mom again. Hey, Mom. What did I do? I opened up another conversation, right? To say goodbye to someone that we've lost or we've lost is not saying I want to forget them for the rest of my life. It's a way of dealing with grief. I want you to notice some things I have to hear because I have 15 minutes and have that 3 pages left. One of the best things you can do for your child is make sure you're emotionally complete with any past losses in your life. The way you deal with grief is the very same way that your child will deal with grief as they grow up. If you stay depressed, they're going to be depressed. And when they lose their pet, they've noticed how you have been depressed because you've lost your loved one, maybe a parent, maybe another child, maybe your mate, and they lose the pet, they're going to do the same thing. Most times when people lose pet, when a child loses a pet, what do we do? We'll buy them another one, right? That's replacing. That's not time to replace an animal, a pet. Let them deal with their grief. Our 9-year-old granddaughter got off school bus and Bella, her little chihuahua, came running and got loose from my son and took off running and got hit by a car and he died. And they buried it and all that type of thing. And somebody said something about, well, I got dogs I'm going to give her. And my 9-year-old daughter said, granddaughter says, I don't want another dog now. She loved Bella. She only had her about a month or two, but she loved Bella. And she did not want something more to take place. There are types of losses. The single most awful in this topic in the English-speaking world is grief or the reaction to the loss. We don't talk about that. Now, some funeral homes try to talk about that when there's a loss. They offer it from private counseling. It's not that interesting to people. Why is it that we do not talk about grief? There's a death of a loved one. How many of us have lost someone in the last 5 years? How many of us are prepared for the death of a loved one, especially unexpected death? Anybody prepared? Some we don't prepare. You see, all relationships are unique. Just remember that. There may be that what we call the loss of a relationship brings about loneliness, no trust, real big hurt. We have to remember, there was a loss of relationship with Jesus, that right? With Lazarus. He loved Lazarus. And he lost him. Not only brought him back to life, but he lost him. We find also, we'll find that there are those who basically will come along and they'll say something like this, we're moving. But when you're moving, what are you doing? You're leaving friends behind. Oh, I get older, I'm an adult. But what about your child? Think they're going to grieve for their friends? You know, Jesus loved the children. And Jesus left John 14, verse 1, let not your heart be troubled. What did he tell them? He'll pop. Don't be troubled. Were they troubled? We find also there comes a time when we would say to someone, well, I trusted you and you betrayed me. That reminds us of Judas Iscariot, does it not? Can you imagine how Jesus felt? Then there's the loss of trust in God. When I do our groups, we do not start with prayer. We don't mention the Bible. You know why? Not because we have others there that are not members of the church. They just come in from other places because we get free. the church does it. We do it through. We just got the Bible book. We do it through. So we don't mention that. This is the reason why. Can you imagine how a person would feel if I sat there and talked about, let us pray to the God, and here she or he sits there and says, God took my child. God did not answer my prayers. It seems that my child or my loved one or whatever it may have been, the lost, whatever it was, God did not get me. And you want me to listen? No, you get wrong. So we don't do that. We do that afterwards. If people come, and do many people do not? Afterwards, we want to talk to you about heavenly things and death and so forth. Then there are those who suffer financial loss. I won't ask if you lost money in the stock market this week, last week, this week. You know, people do that, they lose money. There are other things, typical responses associated with grief, reduced concentration, sense of numbness, disruptive sleeping patterns, changes in eating habits, roller coaster of emotional energy. There are 43 losses that are considered grief. Some examples are death, retirement. Now think about that. I guess I'll agree. Head loss, financial change, increase or decrease in weight, loss of health, easy nests, empty nests, starting school. Y'all kids just start school, right? Y'all agree? Divorcing, moving, legal problems, the end of addiction. Some of the intangible examples of grief, loss of trust, safety, control, faith, and fertility. Now you look at all those things, and we think about them, and then we go back. Grief is individual, and it's unique. There are no stages. I know Elizabeth Kubler Ross, she was working on death and dying and not grief when she wrote a book. Grief cannot be neatly categorized. She was very specific about this distinction in her books if you read them, and yet the media and universities have attached her work to grief. And this is a common misinformation that's confusing her many readers through the years. I have never had times that I've had to go tell people that their loved one is dead, for someone to deny that their loved one is dead. Never had that happen. All relationships are unique. I want to jump to this, and I'm going to just skip right over that, because results of traumatic event is grief. PTSD is a traumatic event. What is the difference between trauma and grief? What is the difference? You know, past 30 years, a variety of words have become popular to describe that of grief. And one word that's recently made headlines is that word trauma. They want to talk about trauma. Language is important. So we're going to clarify on the sake of our word. Trauma is an event. What's the result of that event? Grief. As I told you to begin with, I grieve. Now, when we meet with people and try to do their counseling, whether it be one-on-one and that of a group of like 15 people, what we try to do is make sure we understand some things. Now, everybody has a different perspective. You know, I believe when you die, and when I believe when I die, I'm going to the Hadean world, and it's called paradise. I'm not going to the other side, it's called torment. There's a great gulf that separates us, and then the day of judgment is going to come, I'm going to leave paradise, I'm going to go stand before the judgment seat, and I'm going to go off to heaven. Now, there's another place too called heaven. If you don't land up in paradise, you're in torment and you're going to the other place. And the majority are going to that. What about that? So many people have things about bringing people together, not members of the church. Many, all of them have different perspectives in reference to this type of thing. But the idea is we all understand that there's some spiritual part about us, and we have intellect and we have emotion. Right? How do we all understand that? There's a spiritual side of us, there is the emotional side of us, and there's also, as we would say, the intellect part of us. We all understand that. So what happens to us over the years? 2 or 3 years comes along, and I want you to notice the judge there, 2 or 3 years. And in those 2 or 3 years, we put something like 75% of all those things that we go through in life that we grieve about, we hide all those things within that of the heart of man. Then 15 years later, or 15 years go by, we have 95% of all the things that we have that's happened to us, all 95% of those things have never been dealt with. And they're just building up. Building up. Building up. Building up. What happens when you put a cork over a steaming bottle? Anyway, don't feel bad. Replace the walls. Go buy her a new puppy. Grief, I'm going to go back there in your room and grieve. If you're going to cry, go back in and say. Now, how many of us told our children, if you're going to cry, go back in. See, they're not dealing with it. And we're trying to help them not deal with it. Just take time. You'll get over it. That's what we say. Be strong for others. That would be brothers and sisters. Strong. And stay there. All along, it's built up. You ever heard of people say, well, they had a nervous breakdown? Have we ever stopped and considered what these people were going through? The emotions that they had. All of this stuff they had up here, and all they wanted to find someone who had a heart, with ears, with you to be quiet, don't touch me, let me talk. That's all they need. Now, I said, it's hard. There's other things. Some people will take medication and not understand that. When we talk about resupport is not the same as grief recovery. What we talk about, when we talk about grief recovery, and I see this today just a lot. When David, when he felt fifth man, I'm just about to. I see David, and you see him the same way. Remember, he's the writer of a lot of Psalms, right? And you read those Psalms, don't you see those happy Psalms? What happened to his life? He became a happy life. Oh, spirit, there was still sad in his life, just like they'll always be with us. But yet we find that he was happy. He was going through those things in life that he enjoyed doing in life. He didn't know that was on the last page when he was back. No one likes to feel sad, so they won't. They do what most people are taught. They pretend that they're okay. I ask somebody sometimes, are you okay? And they say, yes, I'm okay. Or they say, are you okay? And I say, I'm okay. Are you okay? And there's a book called I'm Okay, Be Okay. I ask one fellow this, have you read that book? He says, sure have. Sometimes people ask me, how are you feeling? And God saw my post, I said, with my hand. You know what? And you say fine, right? You ask somebody who's reading and say, how are you doing? They say fine. Feelings inside, not expressed. They won't express them. But sometimes we're too good. Let me tell you about when I lost my mother. Or let me tell you about when I lost my pet. Let me tell you about when I lost my child. I don't have any feel because I've done that. There's a right way of doing things. And we need to learn the right way of doing things. As we grieve and complete the events and behaviors of our past, we become open to our ability to be happy. Habits, I can't read that. Habits means that you, happiness means that who and what you are is just fine. That's what happens. What you are. Any question or comment? You have 4 minutes. Anybody? Comment? We might have to sing something if they don't have it coming. But I'm telling you, I got to speak down in Fort Bend, Georgia, at a congregation there on Saturday and on Sunday. One time on Saturday, 2 times on Sunday. And then on Monday, I was invited to the Martin Army Hospital. And I was really shaken. Didn't carry anything in with me, just care of myself. And I had to speak to those people for about an hour and a half, 2 hours. And there were soldiers who were suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. Those soldiers go through this grief recovery method before they're released from the United States Army. And it's amazing to me to see the attitude that those people had at that place. Because some of them were inside the hospital to stay because that's how bad they were. And they had all types of questions because they looked upon, I guess, me in some sense that because I was a recovering person from PTSD and not only that, but dealing with my grief. And I talked to them about grieving and how that I grieved so much for that the ones that had died, especially the fellow who saved my life. I just could not get over those things because everybody was telling me all these other things. There's a way to I really wanted somebody to sit down and listen to what I had to say. My wife would listen to me. But my wife loved me, and when tears would start coming down, my wife wanted to comfort me. And I didn't need to be comforted, because when she comforted me, I hushed. I needed to talk. And we got with a group of people who needed to talk, and that's what we did. We talked, and we talked, and we talked. Therefore, we dealt with our grief. I can see the difference now when I go back. I don't go to the counseling group anymore. I can go back and I can see the difference of the ones. I can walk in and tell you the one that's been there a long time just by listening to a good talk. Because they talk. And that's what we need people that have hearts and ears that will listen to us as they go through what they go through. And may God help us to do that. Am I supposed to have a closing prayer?
Yes.
Good. Any questions? In comment. If you ever see this, I put this up here, and you'll see down at the bottom there, this is, some of this is a mixture of all kinds of stuff. As a matter of fact, the next one is 5 things Christians should learn about depression and anxiety. But if you ever want to go look up something other, this is the place where I went to school, and some of the things that I learned, and now kind of incorporate those. Eventually, I will probably need the grief recovery method and just how the biblical method. All things we've taught have biblical examples for that. That's what I'm trying to do. Because if I retire, this is something I'm going to do. That's it.